Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you're watching us on TV here in Santa Barbara area in California, we welcome you at TVSB. And so many of you are joining us all around the world on all these different platforms, and most recently, including the podcast, which is can be found any podcast platform. You can search for Good Life Conversations. You can find us there. We're so grateful for each one of you. It's Good Life is about the good stuff. And then we've had so many amazing people and people of all walks of life. And it's been such an encouragement to me and to so many. And so we're grateful for you. We're brought to you, as always, by Bunn and Chevrolet, our good friends. We're grateful for them. We encourage you on the YouTube channel to, you can subscribe. And so that would be another thing if you want to be alerted when those videos come live. So there's about 500 videos now on the YouTube channel. And those are both the long form interviews, as well as we break them up into what we call power clips. And so you can find all that on the YouTube channel. I'm really excited about my guest today, coming to us from Weatherford, Texas. Jeff and Julie Wagner are with me. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dean. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I've been excited about this and hearing a little bit about you from our mutual friend Greg Dawson, and we know that I think you guys. What Jeff? Did you play volleyball together? Is that what happened?
We did play volleyball together at Chico State, and then I went off to law school. Most of the guys on the volleyball team were a little different than me at that time. And I came back to Chico after completing law school and saw Greg Dawson on the worship team and kind of did that Tim Allen. I don't get that. But he had met the Lord. And it was game on from there. It was really a lot of fun. And Greg and I enjoyed our years playing ball together at Chico State.
Oh, that's so great. Well, that's great. Well, I say this from time to time, because when I meet friends like you, I think it's true that the family, just as an institution, but we're made in families, and I sometimes think that that especially with our young people, that we're talking about building all kinds of things and getting successful and making money and doing this and doing that and changing the world, and that's nothing wrong with any of that, but there's something really important about building a family. And I don't think there's anything more important in life than building a family. I just think that's what outlasts you. That's the legacy. That's what changed that. You want to change the world. I mean, you guys have 6 kids and 8 grandkids, and it hasn't been easy, but you want to change the world, build a great family. Let me just start with that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm going to tell a little story of my wife, and I want her really to respond, because she is the backbone of really all that we do in that way. I mean, not that I'm not, but she really has been amazing. But so when we first got engaged, and maybe we were married at the time, I remember distinctly where we were in Chico. And I was actually accepted to go to Trinity Seminary, but an elder said, you might be too feisty for the pulpit. So I ended up committing, the ultimate abomination, not going to seminary and going to law school. But Julie turned to me as we were talking, and she said, I will totally support you in your career, but don't hold me back in mine. And I'm like, oh, she's a professional hairdresser. Like, okay, that's fine. She goes, no, family. So go ahead, baby.
Yeah, always. We talked about a large family. We both come from a family of 3 kids. From the time that I started considering marriage and what have you, it was always, I want 4 or more. Number 4, we were so in love with her. We always say that she's the one that kept us going, because just kept getting cuter. But yeah, just always, I just felt like that was my calling. I love being a hairdresser because I could be at home once we started having kids, and I could work out of my home. That pretty much came to a halt, except for family and friends, once we had number five. But my heart's desire, and that's one of the ways I feel like God has really shown me that He loves me, just the fact that, like, He knows my heart and my desire, and He's given me that. So it's it's God and family for me, and everything else can fall by the wayside as far as I'm concerned.
And one of the things that we consciously made a decision to do was be a single income family. I mean, Julia has participated through, you know, cutting here in the home and that sort of thing. But those who, you know, there's, in order to survive sometimes in this economy, that made it tough for us. That's also sort of the chosen profession has allowed me also to have her always at home and being with the kids and pouring into them. So that's a home run.
We also made a covenant when we got married that at 2 years, despite whether we have a home or an RV, all of our friends were kind of like a home, an RV, and then a family. And at 2 years, wherever we were, no matter what, we were going to start our family. And, you know, you speak about James Dobson also just going through some of his stuff pre-marriage. It was taught that if you want to be a one-income family, start out as a one-income family, even if you don't have children. Even if I'm working, put mine aside and just live according to your means as to what the working partner is going to bring in. So that's what we did.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, we had an RV. It was an excursion. All our kids are around it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's, I watched this speech the other day this guy gave, and he said he was, I don't know what the topic of his speech was in general, but just he kind of just had randomly interjected some thoughts. He said, well, my advice for you young people is get married before you're ready and have more kids than you think you can afford.
Was that me? Did I say that?
And I thought, well, you know, speaking of the upside down kingdom of God, where, you know, we do things differently, like, you know, children. I was with a guy on Friday, came into my office, and he's got three kids, and he's living here in Southern California, where nobody can afford to live. Right. And he said, and I said, you know, he's got three, and I think they're heading for number four. And he said, yeah, you know, children are a blessing from the Lord. And so we figure, why not just have more? And I'm like, go for it, man. I'm with you. You know, if you're going to wait to, especially in California, if you're going to wait to have kids until you can afford it,
never happen.
That ship is not coming in. You know, if you're going to wait to get married till you're quote unquote, like, ready, I'm not sure that one's coming in either. So it is kind of a countercultural approach, isn't it?
It is. And of course, they never invite the Wilsons and the Wagner over, because that would be 11. It'd be like locust feeding at the table. So yeah, no, we
right. People ask us, people used to ask us if we wanted to come over for dinner. I said, are you sure? Are you really sure you want to invite us? Like, there's lots of other.
Let me tell you a story. At one point, we had some friends over, and I think we had just had number five. They had three, and they came to dinner, and we really were a team. When people are like, how do you do it? And I'm like, I didn't do it. Jeff and I didn't do it. We did it. And the kids all took responsibility and part of it. So when this couple and their kids came to dinner, and it came to doing the dishes, they're like, oh, let me help. And I'm like, no, the kids will get it. So they saw these three older kids do the dishes. So it was a couple months later, and she called me and she said, you know, after we were there and we saw, like, teamwork, well, we're pregnant. We decided to go ahead and have another one.
It's a team flavor.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's a team. Like, even now, the eight or six of them, they call themselves the Wolf Pack. And they're all 180 degrees different from each other. But they're each other's best friend. They go on sibling vacations every year. And they're really, really tight. So
I love that.
I mean, that that's a treasure to me. I mean, there's all the things raising them that I feel like I'm a failure, we're a failure, who raised you? Like, doesn't seem like you're even from our family, but they choose each other and they say, like, they appreciate the way that they were raised.
But we go on vacation. She was talking about this vacation. We went to St. George Island with the pack, and that included grandkids and everybody and some other family members. I'm sure we violated the space requirements of that house we rented, but they had already planned on me. I said, Mom and Dad, we got meals, we got dishes, we got everything. And it was an incredible 9 or 10 days. Yeah, it is team.
Yeah, when you see your kids loving each other, it's a little bit, I think, into the heart of God when he sees us, you know, the pleasantness that happens when brothers and sisters dwell together in unity. Yeah. I think we can taste that, because is there anything better than seeing your kids get along and love each other?
Well, let me say, there was some conflicts that went on.
No.
It was so cool. I know. Look. You know, the glass is half full for Jeff all the time. But to see how they worked through it was amazing, because they live at different parts of the country, and one has two girls and one has two boys, and one is like, boys will be boys, and the other one is like, no, they won't. Like, they're going to, you know. and so we didn't even, like, for a while, we didn't even know what was going on till there were tears and they kind of both went to their corners. But by the time we left, it was, you know what? I love you. You do it your way. I'll do it my way. Never the twain will meet, but we're siblings. We're friends. This isn't, it doesn't matter on that.
Yeah.
So, I always think when God says, I come to give you life and give you life abundantly. So I feel like we have an abundance of children. We have abundance of blessing, but that abundance also means you have an abundance of ill health, or you have abundance of sorrow. You have to look at the other side of the chart and balance it out, that you're having an abundance of all the opposites also.
Right.
But sure. When he says, I come to give you life, then through all those things, yeses and nos, joys, sorrows, you know, rejoicing and grieving, there's still an abundance, and that abundance is him. So whenever we have felt like failures, or I particularly, he's just always really said, you know, I know your heart. I know their hearts. This is, you know, I gave them to you, and I love them more than you do, which is unfathomable to me.
So, do you guys see that I married way over my head already?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yeah. Can you turn his mic off?
that happens a lot, but I take her, I do some prison ministry, and I take her in, and it's game on. It normally, if we're going places, she comes in behind me, grabs onto my arm, goes, don't leave me. We go in and do prison ministry, and I'm looking for where she is next. It's pretty cool.
I love that. I want to get into that in a second, but how did you make it through teenager season?
Duct tape and handcuffs.
I relegated certain arguments to Jeff, or just I took things so personally until we got to like 4, 5, and 6. Because number two is a girl, redheaded, just, you know, I said no spaghetti straps or your midriff showing, and it was a battle every day.
Redhead?
Yeah.
Oh. Megan. Oh. So redheads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get
I've got redheads. You don't have to tell me.
Your money. Yeah. So, and there were just times, like, I would call Jeff and I'd be crying. And he'd say, you know what? You ruin their day. Don't you let them ruin your day. I was like, okay, I can do this.
Well, I would come running in with my black and white shirt, blowing my whistle, but it really wasn't quite that bad. I have to really give a prop to it. I'm not sure that they're still around, but it was Peacemaker Ministries with Ken Sondy, and I was part of that as a young lawyer, and they had a young peacemakers thing, and I used to go to the Christian school in town and teach conflict resolution. Now, I'm sort of gifted in that way anyway, but much of that we utilized, and we're very different in the way that we process that. But, you know, listen, from the time a kid is 7, 8, 9, 10, they're starting to get their own true identity. And when they move into teenage years, we may describe it as selfishness, but what it is beginning to capture their identity, wanting to make their own decisions, seeing other options, and trying to find out why those people do those things. And if my kids are listening right now, it'd be like, is this live or Memorex? We have different rules. And they got that. It was like, how come they get to whatever right. It was? And we lived that out, notwithstanding some considerable pushback, even from within the church, of how, you know, we would do things. I mean, we homeschooled up to ninth grade. And then by that time, we figured that we got their hearts. Let's launch them. Let's send them into high school and whatever. Now, some of the younger ones, because my bride had two little guys, our youngest, and three in homeschool still. And we're like, geez, I came home one day and I go, yeah, I still want to be married. So we put some in Christian school and some in junior high public school. But this time where they're in the teenage years, it's just a point where don't run them off. Don't, you know, have your values, continue to hang with them, but process and talk and love them in the midst of their failure. I think it's probably more that you have to say in that, just as we raise them, but it's probably, we are very different in how we process conflict. And I tend to be the mediator. And she is very good at making our family, that includes me, by the way, toe the line. And sometimes it was like she had nine kids, and I get that. And because I would jump right in with the kids, and she'd look at me and go, really? Well, the family. Oh, yeah, that's right. There'd be seven kids. Yeah, math was never my strong suit. So. But we would. It was a good tag team. She talks about team, and it really was. And by the way, it's not just your internal team. It's those who you surround yourself with at church, your friends. You know, no plug big time here, but Greg and Shelley Dawson, big time friends. John and Lily Lauer and many friends when we were in Chico who, you know, mentored us. You know, I read a lot. I was mentored by Jim Dobson. I was mentored by Jim and B Book. They own Book Family Farms in Chico. As a leadership model, I read a lot of John Wooden and Dr. Henry Cloud and some other guys who just taught me how to lead, because I didn't, you know, the scriptures give us the way to lead, but I needed more specific stuff. And so we had also a team of folks within the church that helped us and gave us feedback. And that's how we got through.
I just learned something this past weekend. Our eldest son was here visiting for a week, and he's our prodigal. And he has spent, I think he mentioned, 3 or 4 years in therapy. And so I would say when we would all be together, and he would say, I have to go for my, you know, do my Zoom or whatever. 2 hours later, he would come out and I'm like, so you fixed? And he kind of chuckled. And I'm like, you know, I have someone you could talk to for 5 minutes and he's free and you'd be fixed forever. So he kind of rolled his eyes at me and go, yeah, mom. And I know it's in his heart. I know everything's there. But just in our discussions, he was sharing a lot of what he has learned in therapy. And like, I had to apologize to him. I was learning things that he was saying, and I'm going, I'm sorry, that was me. Like, I'm like that, and I gave that, you know, and going through all of this. And then he said something that really hit home to me. He said, Dad is intellectual and sensitive. You're sensitive and emotional. And so where he would kind of, the kids would kind of say, he went lawyer on me. he would start, you know, well, working his logic and his mediation skills and, you know, all this. And they're like, I'm not a client. Then I'm the other side. And when I calm down after being hurt and want to get involved and interject, then I'm usually the one that's crying and, you know, help me understand and, you know, this whole thing. So we have our tough times with it, but like, it's really a great balance when it all comes together. So I just, it was such an enlightening moment for me.
Be good listeners, you know, teenagers, be good listeners. Just listen, listen, love, and keep your wits about you. Because right now, all six of my kids, they'll come in and they'll still pile on our couch, watch a movie, or just hang out. And I like that. To me, that's the home run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think families, you know, people that are really committing to go the distance really do have a target on their back spiritually.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a real, I mean, this is my opinion that, you know, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. This is a very finite moment that we're like in these bodies. And so the enemy, I believe there's an enemy, and that families, the family unit as a whole, but families like yours really are going to take some incoming. We've taken incoming with suffering, with self-inflicted suffering, and people know my story for the most part. But so, I mean, how have you guys weathered suffering? How have you stayed together? This is, I think, 42 years of marriage. Talk a little bit about, because this program is called Good Life, but doesn't mean like the good life, like these shiny, happy people with no problems and nice cars. Like, that's not what this is. This is real. You know, this is authentic. This is, and so talk a little bit about kind of how you guys have gone the distance here, and, you know, by the grace of God, we'll go the rest of the way until we're in a much better place. But talk about that.
I'm just going to give a quick blurb and then let Julia go. But I was very focused on getting a wife who loved Jesus. I was in church. There was, I'm a quote maverick here, it's a very target rich environment. But she just stood out. It's not when it's easy. It's when it's hard.
Yeah.
It's when 60% of the world, and the church's statistics are no different, vote with their feet in divorce when
things get.
And I'm so thankful for that. So that's.
I was raised in a home where we didn't talk religion at all. I was raised on the East Coast in New York. I remember coming home from school one day and saying, okay, so everybody's Catholic or they're Jewish. Like, what are we? What am I? And my mom said, well, you're Protestant. And I'm like, okay, not knowing even what that is. So no faith at all, whatever. I will say that I remember from as far back as I can remember, I would always pray. I would pray to God. When I go back and look at, I love to write. And when I go back and just look at some of my writings, like, I was always writing to God or about God or about our relationship, even though I didn't have a personal relationship, I didn't understand salvation message, none of that. So I just, fast forward, I was saved, just plucked out of my family. When I was 11, my dad committed suicide. My mom sold the house, picked us up, moved from New York to California. I learned in California what divorce and step parents and step brothers and sisters are. I never heard of that ever until I was in sixth grade. So there was that whole thing. So I would say, like, those were the years that I decided how I wanted to do things and how I didn't want to do things. All godly characteristics, but not knowing that it was. Then when I was 18, just shy of 18, I had a 7-year relationship with the same man, boy, whatever. And So drugs came into the scene, and he chose drugs, and I felt abandoned. But the Lord had brought Jeff into my life 3 months earlier. We spent the whole summer just being friends and talking, and I couldn't believe that, like, just the thing that he was so consistent and he was so grounded, and he was safe. So I had spent 7 years kind of break up, get together, break up, get together. And with Jeff, it was like 3 months. Then we decided we're going to pursue a relationship. I broke it off with my boyfriend. I ended up, after 3 months, moving to Chico, quit my job, moved to Chico, lived with a family from church. So basically for 3 years, I'd lived on my own and had my own place. So I go into living with a family and having restrictions and everything. But we just started pursuing our relationship, and we got engaged at 1 year that we had met each other. And I just remember sitting on the stairs at rehearsal dinner, and people were like, "I'm nervous, you this, you that." And I was shocked at how certain I was that this was the man that God had given me. So fast forward, when we hit hard times, I know that God plucked me out of my family and saved me. So that's very, very personal. And it was just me alone in my room. Somebody had given me a Bible, John 3:16. You know, no one comes to the Father but by me. I had a personal visitation where I looked like I just turned around in my room. I saw Jesus standing in my room. I saw this ladder and this light. And it was just, no man comes to the Father but by me. Like, he didn't say a word, but I just knew if I just go up that ladder with him, like I, from my dad's suicide, I wanted to know what happens at death. Where will I go? I want to be in heaven. I just started like, I got to be in heaven. I want to be in heaven. So I would say that in all the things that came along in our marriage that could have destroyed us, I felt shrunk wrapped by the Holy Spirit. I acted in a way that I never thought I would act. I, you know, if I had a list before I got married of everything that I thought would kill me, I'd pretty much say that all those things have been checked off. And I'm alive. Alive. Our marriage is alive. The Holy Spirit is more alive. God is so faithful. And he would always remind me, like, there's more to lose. If we quit at this, there's more to lose than just us.
Right.
It's our kids are broken up. You know, it's Christmas here and Thanksgiving there. And, you know, grandkids are like, it was just a mess. And really, I would say it wasn't that I chose Jeff. I chose God. That's that for me. That's how I've stayed in the game, is I've just chosen God. And he's been faithful to tell me that I chose him for you, and he completes you. And even when I hate that and I think I've been cheated, then there's days I feel like, wow, I was chosen. Like, I was chosen for this.
Yeah.
So it's a real balancing, but it's worked. And yeah, marriage is tough. I tell young ladies who come to me and are asking questions, I said, it is the hardest thing you will ever do
right.
in your life.
Right, right. Absolutely.
For many years, Jeff would tell me, you know, that really hurts my feelings. Like, why would you say that? That's not the way it is. I'm like, from a woman's perspective, at least I know that it is. So do you agree?
Yes, I have such admiration for people that make it, you know, 30 minutes in marriage. I mean, if you're looking for a way out, there are plenty of off ramps, you know, and everybody, but staying, I think that there's a nobility to it. I think that there's a generational impact to staying. I think there's a generational impact to doing the work, and everybody thinks forgiveness is a good idea until it's your turn. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody agrees that forgiveness is a great concept until you've been hurt, and the devil knows where to hit you. You mentioned your list, Julie. Mm-hmm. Everybody, the devil knows exactly where to hit you. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly where to hit my wife.
Yeah.
To maximize pain, to maximize the wounds, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that is that's amazing to me. And the people that make it, my dad's sitting right over here, 55 years coming up. This week. No, next week. A week. Yeah. I'm glad I reminded you. You know, 50 people that make it 55 years of marriage, because we are so different. I mean, one last thing I saw, I'm sitting there with my wife the other day outside in our backyard, and she's convinced, she's asking me what are you thinking about? You know, and she's convinced that I'm thinking about like the inner, the most deep truths of our marriage or something. I said, you want to know what I'm thinking about? She said, yeah. I said, I'm thinking about where do the raccoons go during the day?
Yeah, a lot of times people ask me, what do you think? Like when we get in the car, I'm not a talker in the car. My mind just goes like, and he always goes, so what are you thinking about? What's going on? And I'm like, you don't even want to know. And he's like, no, I do. And I go, I don't even know where to begin. So it's just, I can't. Just like I'm all over the place.
You know, one of the things that when we were going through a very hard time in our marriage that involved some pretty bad decisions by me, and I don't, mind sharing a bit of that, but it involved pornography and acting out in ways that really began to destroy our marriage. And it was really a, and we went to, and I couldn't recommend this anymore, but Dr. Harry Schomburg runs Stonegate Resources. And really, he started out at just with church leaders who had fallen and had a lot of issues. And he has two books. One's called False Intimacy. The other is called Undefiled. But, and I had, no disrespect, love me for some Steve Farrar and Atterbury. And I'd read a lot of those books. But as a church leader and as a guy who just, I didn't know how to get the stuff out. I didn't know, I shame is a big factor in all of this. And I'm struggling for this with well over a decade. And I'm, crushing my bride or my kids was just like, I don't know how to do this. But when we got, we went to a 10-day intensive thing with Harry, and blessed man, I can still call him up at any time. He's still doing it in Port Washington, Wisconsin. At that time, it was at Colorado Springs. But you can go into all the weeds of the world that choke you out. And that really was happening for me, law practice and kids and this and that. And, my pursuit of the Lord was on a slippery slope. And it was great because Harry was able to point out, listen, these are spiritual things. Yes, there are behavioral aspects, but this is a deep spiritual thing. When I shared with him, kind of where we were, he looked at me and I could have got into the gutter and not been able to see over the top after Harry looked at me and went, that says a lot about you. And, but it was my relationship with the Lord and where all the protective stuff that's so important for us. During that 10 days, most of our time was spent reading and praying, and moving our life and our marriage back into the Lord. Listen, we were in church. This is embarrassing, but I was an elder during some of that time. Mm-hmm.
When everything came out and I chose to stay with Jeff, I can't tell you the number of people that came to me and said, you have the right to leave. And one person came to me and said, I want you to know, because she and her husband had many, many struggles. And her husband had been acting out for years and they stayed the course. But she said, there will be people that will want nothing to do with you in the church. And that was so true. We were in a marriage class. And the people that were leading the marriage class, from the moment it hit the airwaves, they had nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
Our kids were going to a prom and they were all gathered at the home and having dinner together. So we happened to be there. And well, I was there, Jeff wasn't, but I was there taking pictures and everything. And I was talking with someone, and this other woman who was one of the leaders of the marriage group just came up, interrupted me, started talking, and it was like I wasn't even there. And so I just backed away and like went somewhere else. But that's the judgment, and they will talk a story, but when the story hits, everybody has an opinion. Everybody, I mean, it's, you have to just, it was so surreal for me. I felt like I was 10 feet off the ground. I was looking at the world. I'm thinking, you don't even know how ugly this world is. You have no idea how ugly this world is.
Right.
You know, and it's right. Just like, how can you, how, I'd go to pick up the kids. Jeff was out of the home for several months, and I'd go to pick the kids up at summer Bible camp, whatever. And just struggling to hold myself together. And I'd go in there and I'd think, these kids are learning this stuff. All your parents think you have this perfect little life, and my kids are in this, and you know, my husband, dad, dad. To me, everything came false. The world became totally false.
Yeah.
Because everything that wasn't God had been knocked out from underneath me. Everything. And, you know, I said that, you know, everything hard prior was a training field.
Excuse me, just a minute. Go ahead.
And then when this happened, I felt like, you know what? God gave us 25 years behind us. He gave us 6 kids. And I needed that. I think if it had been any earlier, I would have just said, I am out of here. Or right. I would always tell Jeff, people would come and want to talk to us thinking we have this great marriage. And him being an elder, and they would leave. Or he'd be off the phone with them, and I would tell Jeff, man, if that was my husband, I would castrate him, I would tar and feather him, and I would hang him out in the court square and say whatever he was doing. So Jeff was like, I would take the kids and the dogs, he would never see us again. That was me. So he was like, I can never say anything. So like he said, it was years of him kind of, you know, position heal thyself, which wasn't working. So, no, it wasn't. you know, when I look back, God was, well, he's in and through everything. That's why I just, you know, is your abundance in him in the hard times, or are you thinking it's only in the good times?
And the forgiveness part. So in our study, go figure, Harry was leading us through Hosea, the Valley of Achor, and
the one part that I was telling Jeff this morning, which it just came to my mind this morning, in Hosea 2, how God tells Hosea, find a woman that basically is a prostitute, that is dabbling everywhere where she shouldn't be. So Gomer. He takes Gomer, and good for a while, and then she bears him a child, and she goes back out, like, no, I want to go sell more oats. And God keeps telling him, go back out, get her, like, bring her back in into the fold, restore her, redeem her, and bring restoration to your family, because this is how I love Israel. And, you know, the Israelites, oh, I want to go back to Egypt, I want to do this, I want to, and God stays faithful. And that's what I, you know, when you talk about kids too, I told the kids, like, every one of you have broken my heart, every one of you. But I remember when our oldest, smart kid, but he just had this arrogant part of him about just being smart. He would say, well, I don't need to do that because I already know it. So he was taking tests, but he wasn't doing homework, and we didn't know this. So I think he was in ninth grade, and I was pregnant, I think with number four or five. So anyhow, the teacher calls me, and she says, you know, I'm really confused, and he looks a great student, but I just want you to know he's failing because he's handed in no homework, and he's gotten A's on his test, but no, I can't pass him. So, you know, and now at this point, he's sneaky about it. So I go into the family room, and I sit down, and I confront him, and I just, pregnant, emotional, I just start crying. Like, I can't even believe this. So I go upstairs, and I'm in the bathroom. I'm trying to, like, dry up my face. And our daughter comes up, wraps her arms around me, looks in the mirror. So we see each other in the mirror. She goes, Mom, I will never hurt you. And so I'm like, well, but every one of them has. You know, but I always say to her, remember you said you would never hurt me? Well, this is hurting me. So, it's the same thing. It's we're all wanting to go back to whatever from time to time.
But walking in forgiveness, one of the things that probably I would say we modeled the best is being able to say, I'm so sorry. Oh, I failed you. Well, okay. But we modeled it. And Julie will tell you that it's not always a strong suit for her, but that's how gloves and hands fit together. You know, just being able to say, I failed you. I'm sorry to my son, to my daughter, to my wife, to, you know, her, to me. And if there was something I could say is walking our life, whether we're believers or not, if we can walk in forgiveness and, you know, restoration. So confession, forgiveness, and restoration, that's a great principle for anybody. And if I could say that's how we have made it through the hard times, through the difficult times, through the places where we've hurt each other or hurt our kids or our kids have hurt us, to go to them and say, we love you. We disagree with you, but we love you. And we want relationship with you. There are some parameters to our relationship, but we love you and we want to be in relationship with you. And even if you choose not to be, and even if you choose to go far off with your inheritance, Luke 15, I'm gonna go out every day and I'm going to look for you.
Right. Right. I thought you said he wasn't the emotional one. What's wrong with you, Jeff? Pull it together.
Yeah, well, I am the crybaby.
Oh, I love it. It's beautiful. So beautiful. So real quick, I want to talk about Lila Grace because, you know, we have that in common. Your granddaughter who had a stroke in utero. I had our second daughter had a stroke in utero. I had never heard of such a thing until January 3rd of 2002. So we've learned about that God doesn't make mistakes and this didn't sneak up on God. And our daughter Ella Claire is now 21 and she's like changing the world.
That's amazing.
One phone call at a time. She calls people. She's on our team here at the foundation. And she's the CEO, the chief encouragement officer. And so she makes phone calls and it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. I get to overhear some of this, but how has Lila Grace impacted you guys just in this as a grandchild?
You know, we get this, opportunity. Julie and I actually discovered it first. I mean, this is their first kid. And they don't see some of the things. And, you know, we have a little experience. We've had we've created six human beings and we see these things and slowly we're able to define, but it has drawn us close together. Number one, but number two, it has drawn us prayerfully in and then to watch how God has been amazing in this journey with Lila, because as I told you, Dean, they said, well, you know, if she's, and we discovered this at like maybe 12, 15 weeks and at like maybe 16 weeks or 20 weeks, they did a full neuro workup and said they saw areas of her brain that were undeveloped and, you know, we were all playing the waiting game. And then we're just praying over her and praying over her. And her parents at that time, I mean, they're taking her to therapy. They're just getting after it. But, you know, they said she wouldn't walk because it's her left side. So her left hand is a little bit palsied and her left foot. She's a miracle story. She's walking, talking, loving, amazing kid. But instead of walking, she started scooching. So our other granddaughters would show up and they would scooch. They would not walk. They would get on the floor and scooch with her. And then eventually they're like helping her up. And so this is back to the
floor. They would put her on a blanket, pull her around with them.
Yeah. And so we just watch her develop amazingly, miraculously to the doctors. I mean, Cook's Children in the DFW Metroplex is like a huge kids thing. It's both post birth therapy as well as they'll put you into all kinds of programs but she walked in the other day, and her first run is to Poppy and Mimi and Poppy Mimi, and she is loving, and she's articulate, and she's artistic, and she worship dances. She's always singing. And we have all these videos of her and her younger sister, Rosalyn, who, like I said, is her bestie. So I'm a second born. She's a second born. Rosie's a second born. And we tend to be rather protective. And if anybody messes with Lila, you're going to get a young member of the wolf pack.
I love it.
But Lila is amazing.
Rosie, her younger sister, will help her. We're trying to discuss like a concept or something, and Lila's just not getting it. And then Rosie will go, Lila, like this, and she'll help her. And it's, I think young adults think that they're immortal, and it's kind of like, well, nothing's going to happen to me. Nothing's going to happen to us. And, it was hard when I was saying, like, she's not using her left side. And I remember we had, like, we call it a come to Jesus meeting, but, they wanted to come to us and say, the comment was made by our daughter-in-law, well, we just want you to love her. Stop trying to find things wrong with her. And so I said, we'll back up. I told our son, go to the next doctor's visit. And when they say, do you notice anything? Say, yes, she's not using this. And I mean, they diagnosed it so fast. And so they were on the physical therapy and everything so fast.
And that was fear driven too. I mean, they were like, oh no, yeah. It's our first baby.
Yeah. But I remember them calling, Kyle calling us from the neurologist's office and just weeping and saying, she has cerebral palsy. And we were able to be really strong because God had already told us something is wrong with her. And so it didn't shock us. And I think you can attest to this. There's something you feel, again, it can be a sorrow and a sad, but don't you feel chosen that God gave her to you to love and take care of?
For her to love, I used to say, for so many years we prayed. I remember being in the NICU with Ella Claire, head was half caved in, and they didn't think she's gonna live, breathe, mm-hmm. do anything. And I remember saying, I've said many times since, we for years we prayed for healing, and it just turns out it was mostly us that needed the healing. And so she changed our life. You can, if you want to watch my testimony on YouTube, Greg will send it to you. You can see, you can actually see her. I play a video of her. She hears from the Lord. And so I play a video of Ella Claire telling me what she heard from the Lord in Spanish. It's changed our life. I would just say to Lila Grace's parents, I forget which, I can't keep track of all these kids' names. I don't know what you're expecting a lot from me here. You've got like 17 kids and 24 grand. So whoever the parents are of Lila, I would just say that God is in the long story, and it's probably going to blow your mind what happens here, because Ella Claire is absolutely, I wouldn't change a thing. And she had, much like you, 2/3 of her brain was damaged, left side affected mostly, but it's spiritually what's happened. This did not sneak up on the Lord, and it's been a miracle in our life. But I only have 1 minute, but tell me why you do prison ministry, Jeff, and both of you.
Honestly, I'd done a lot of different ministry, literally from kids flannel boards all the way up through college, high school, and actually taught. They call them the salty sages. I think I am one now, but I was looking for something more gritty, and I'm really kind of a blue collar guy. When it comes to being a believer, I like gritty ministry. So it is part of the Jesus's mandate from Matthew 25, which is, hey, this is how we're going to separate. And don't forget about these folks. Why? Because they feel abandoned. And my kids didn't feel abandoned. My family doesn't feel abandoned. So we do that. And Julie actually creates journals for them, waits on the Lord for verses, puts them in there. The guys push each other aside to get a journal because they know that Julie's waiting on a verse for them.
I love prison ministry because, again, it was God acting. Him being an attorney, he said, it's a good thing you're not a judge. Everybody would be guilty. Going in there, like...
I heard Judge Roy Bean.
God, my heart, it's like God allows me to see past everything. They are real. They are raw. It's not, a lot of them have never had a relationship with the Lord, or obviously are so far away that it's foreign and they just crave it. And I hate playing church. I really do.
Yeah.
I'm not involved in a whole lot of women's ministries because I feel like it's a lot of fluff. Not to put down those ministries.
You would get along great with my wife, Julie.
And there's times I'm lonely. I'm like, I wish I had more friends. In Chico, we grew up and raised kids, so they were there. Here, we're older. And Jeff's like, well, if you want a friend, make a friend. And I said, I like naturally occurring friendships. So
that's not. We had friends drop in till midnight, and we couldn't separate. But back to prison.
One time I was just in a really dark place in our marriage with some stuff, and we're driving, and the Lord said, go to prison. And he told Jeff the same thing. And he said, why do you think the Lord wants us to go there? And I said, I think he wants me to ask them to pray for us. We went in there and I just said, I need you guys to pray for us. I need you to pray for me. I am really struggling. I am telling you, the heavens opened up. This guy started to pray. It was so powerful. I think that's one of the most powerful prayers I've ever had over me and us.
It's amazing.
God uses those that you don't think that he will, and he ministers to everybody. And
that's so true.
It's power. In prison, everything is really powerful. Really powerful. So that's what
I absolutely love it. And I think one of the areas I think we're like-minded is I have trouble trusting people that don't walk with a limp.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I'm over it kind of. So I'm with you, Julie.
Yeah.
This has been real. The time was up like 20 minutes ago. So sorry, guys. I couldn't cut this off. Amazing. Amazing. I'm so encouraged. People are going to be very encouraged by this. I love it. We covered a lot of ground. You guys are fantastic. And I appreciate you sharing your story. And it's good to meet you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. And if we just be happy to do it whenever. By the way, we're going to be out Santa Barbara here not too long to hang out
good.
With Kelly. So maybe we'll get good. Some FaceTime.
And I can meet your wife.
That you would love my wife. We'll do dinner. Greg will pay for it all. So good. That's perfect. Yeah. Phenomenal.
Or maybe he'll cook it for us.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I really trust his cooking yet, but we're getting there. Yeah. We're getting there. Greg Dawson since 1958. That's what I call him.
That's it.
Just to remind him. Hey, guys, thank you. Well, I'd love to see you in Santa Barbara. So let's hang out for sure.
Thanks, Dean.
And thank you all for joining us today on Good Life. We're so grateful, and we'll see you next time.